we're all good at a few things, but we all have that one thing that makes us special. We all have that one thing that makes us unique, makes us different. We have that superpower. And the more quickly you can figure out what it is about you that makes you special, what it is about you that makes you different, what it is about you that makes you unique, the more successful you'll be in life, the more successful you'll be in business, the more successful you'll be as a leader. So my advice to anyone listening is to get on that leadership journey as quickly as you can. Get on that process of self-discovery. Understand who you are, what you are, what you're good at, what you're great at, and channel every fiber of your being into that.
Hi, I'm Chris Ippolito, and welcome to Get Coach 360, where I'm documenting my journey from employee to entrepreneur while featuring the coaches that are helping me along the way. Each episode, these coaches provide actionable advice to help me and you, the audience, find more success as entrepreneurs. I invite you to join the journey so we can go and grow together.
Welcome to another episode of Get Coach 360. In this episode, Chris sits down with Adam Mendler, entrepreneur, leadership writer, speaker, and advisor, as well as host of the 30 Minute Mentors podcast and CEO of the Velos Group. Adam goes deep into the need to be fearless, harnessing your unique superpower, differentiating yourself, and stepping up to make those big commitments. He also touches on how to reach out and genuinely connect with people over a common bond, as well as product validation and putting in the hard work before you decide to go to market. And, as always, we'll close with Adam sharing his advice for how you can take action now to level up wherever you need it most.
Hi, Adam.
Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great. Welcome to the Get Coach podcast. Glad to have you on. I'd love if we can dive right in. This is how I love to start every episode. I want to know more of your story. How did you get to be where you're at right now, which is many things: podcast host, serial entrepreneur, keynote speaker. Can you walk us through a little bit of how that journey started and how you came to be where you are today?
Sure. Firstly, Chris, thanks again for having me. My pleasure, really excited to spend the time with you and with your listeners. My journey started really in the early days of my childhood. I grew up on a street called Velos Avenue, and that might sound familiar to some listeners who know a little bit about me because my company is the Velos Group. And when my brother and I started the Velos Group back in 2012, it was a no-brainer for us to name it after Velos Avenue because that was just such a pivotal part of who we are, who we became, who, in my own personal case, really my values, the way I think and the way I act. My journey went from Velos to USC, where I had a great experience in college, went on to Wall Street, spent a couple of years working for what was then the largest hedge fund in the world, a company called D.E. Shaw. And after D.E. Shaw, I got my MBA at UCLA, brought me back to LA, where I've stayed and have no intention of ever leaving. I mean, this is the best city. Who'd ever, no offense, Chris, but who'd ever leave Los Angeles, sunny Southern California? Yeah. And while I was at UCLA, I worked in the entertainment industry. I worked for a big studio and a big agency, worked for Universal Pictures and for William Morris Endeavor. And then I went back into finance for Credit Suisse, so big Swiss bank, worked for them for about a year and a half. I had all this corporate experience under my belt, and I was in my late 20s, I was 28. Felt like I kind of knew what the corporate world was like. If I ever was going to do anything entrepreneurial, that was the time for me to do it. My energy was never going to be higher. My expenses were never going to be lower. It was the time to take the leap, and I did. And I haven't looked back. So in the time since, we've started three different businesses in three different industries. We have an office furniture company, Beverly Hills Chairs. We're the leading sellers of refurbished brand name chairs. So the Herman Miller Aeron chair, which is the number one best-selling office chair ever made, retails for about $1,200. We sell it for $500 to $600. It looks like a brand new chair. It functionally, aesthetically is like a brand new chair, and we give a lifetime warranty. And that's one of our businesses. We sell to lots of small to medium sized businesses. We've also sold to lots of brand name companies. Chris, I'm guessing this podcast is going to be streaming on Spotify. We've sold chairs to Spotify. We've sold chairs to the US Senate, to West Point, to lots of universities. That's one of our companies. We have another company called Custom Tobacco, where you can go online and create your own fully customized private label cigars in real time. We have a software development company called Velo Solutions. And I do a lot of writing and speaking on leadership. It's a very important topic to me. And I started a podcast called 30 Minute Mentors, which I know we'll talk a little bit about, where I go one-on-one with the most successful leaders on how they got to the top, leaders of household name companies, military leaders, really prominent celebrities and athletes, on how they got to the top, but more importantly, on how listeners can get to the top as well. So it's a mouthful, it's a journey, but it's fun. I love it. I'm passionate about everything I do, and it makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, that's awesome. When I was looking into the 30 Minute Mentors podcast, I saw a lot of commonality with what I'm trying to do here with the Get Coached podcast. And I feel that with kind of the message I'm delivering is a little bit more around like when you're first starting out and you're just kind of like looking for that kind of coach and mentor and having actionable advice. And it sounds like the 30 Minute Mentor is fairly similar, but the people you're talking to are you know, very well established entrepreneurs. I'm reaching up there, I guess is one way I'm putting it. And you, having you on has been an honor, because I think you've done a lot and you've had a lot of success. So I appreciate that.
Chris, one of the things I just want to say, the honor is mine. I'm thank honored you. To be here with you. I'm honored to be here with your audience, and I hope to be able to provide whatever insight and advice I can over the course of our conversation. So thanks again.
I'm looking forward to it. One of the things I wanted to do, and it's kind of almost like a bit of a project I'm doing with this podcast, is what are some of the lessons you've learned so far, or perhaps the common themes you've seen with the people that you've sat down with for this 30 Minute Mentors?
It's a great question. It's a question I'm often asked. And there are a lot of themes that emerge when you talk to really successful people, regardless of the verticals that they're in. One theme that emerges is just how important the core principles of leadership are, regardless of the field that you're in. You could listen to a conversation with a leading general or admiral, and the advice that they give is as applicable to someone trying to become a great military leader as it is to someone trying to lead a startup company or lead a Fortune 500 company or lead a sports team. I could tell you that as an entrepreneur, I listen to and consume the content that I'm getting from my guests, apply it to my businesses, apply it to my leadership style. There is so much wisdom that I'm personally consuming from guests who have backgrounds and experiences very different than my own. And I know that listeners who I've spoken to, including guests of mine, something cool for me has been hearing from guests of mine who are the most successful people in the country, who tell me, hey, I'm a guest, but I'm also a listener of your show. And who knew how much I had in common with the CEO of Gold's Gym? Who knew how much I had in common with the founder of Kayak? Who knew how much I had in common with Rob Lowe or with Suzanne Summers? I spoke to someone yesterday, actually, who's going to be a guest on the show. And he said, you know, I was listening to a few episodes and I was taking notes. And this person who's going to be guesting on the show is an unbelievably successful leader. So that's one thing that I always try to share with audiences I talk to. Another interesting point, which I think is particularly important for listeners to understand in these moments is a question that I'll often ask, or I'll ask some variation of it, is on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is ethics to leadership? And I don't ask this in every episode, and I actually only really ask it in a handful of episodes because I know a lot of my guests, and a lot of my guests will sort of talk about it implicitly. But anytime I do ask that question, the answer is 10, if not higher. And I don't just leave it there. It's not just, you know, what's your number? It's an explanation as to why are ethics so important to leadership. And the stories that are shared, the detailed insight and wisdom. I'll give you an example, Chris. I did an interview with Gary Michelson, who is a self-made billionaire. Not too many self-made billionaires out there. There are a lot of people who've inherited money. There are people who say they're billionaires, but won't show their tax returns. But Gary Michelson was a doctor, and he worked as a doctor during the day. And at night, he would go home and work on his inventions. And next day, he'd go to work, and at the end of the day, come back home and keep working on his inventions. And next thing you know, he sells his inventions for over $1 billion. So just a truly inspiring guy. And when you understand his story, his personal narrative, his journey, growing up in an environment where there was no money, he had to work his way through college. He had to work his way through graduate school. He was about to graduate from medical school and was faced with having to do medical procedures that he deemed to be unethical, mm-hmm. and refused to do them and risked expulsion. The administration at his medical school basically said, you have to do these or we're going to kick you out. You're not going to graduate. And here's a guy who didn't have other options. He wasn't a silver spoon billionaire. This was a guy with no money. And he put everything on the line because he didn't believe that what he was asked to do was ethical. And he won the game of chicken. And it was a moment that was pivotal in who he became and what ultimately shaped an unbelievably successful career. And you hear stories like that from all these incredible people. And you really understand that when someone says that ethics are important to leadership, it's not lip service. It's something that these guys really live and breathe. So those are a couple of things. We can go on and on. I know that there's only so much time we have in this podcast, but hopefully that at least sheds a little bit of light into some of the things we talk about and some of the things that are really important to me and to the people who I interview.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there an invention that we would, like the majority of us would be familiar with that he did? Do you
hopefully
know of some?
Not. Hopefully not, because
they're all medical based.
Yeah, he was a spinal surgeon. Okay. So okay. he was a spinal surgeon and invented a lot of medical devices. And interestingly enough, his inspiration for becoming a spinal surgeon was his grandmother, who had a debilitating spine condition. And Gary grew up witnessing that and really wanted to make a difference in the world and wanted to help reduce and eliminate suffering, and ultimately invented medical devices to bring that to the world. So hopefully our listeners are not familiar with his products.
One of the past careers you had really piqued my interest, because I spent just over 10 years in the world of finance, was in wealth management for about 6 years of it. So during that time working with the hedge fund, do you remember some of the valuable lessons you learned during that time?
It's actually funny you bring that up. So I have a really good friend, a good buddy of mine, whose name is also Adam. And Adam, this is a bit of a tangent. I'm not going to directly okay. answer your question, but maybe I'll get to answer your question. But Adam, and I were texting this morning because I just released a podcast episode with the play-by-play announcer for the Angels. And Adam is a huge baseball fan. He's a Dodger fan. I'm an Angel fan. But my guest was the play-by-play announcer for the Angels. And I, and Adam is actually friends with the color commentator for the Angels. So I texted Adam and I said, hey buddy, check out my latest podcast. I think you'll enjoy it. And he checked it out and he was like, wow, dude, this was awesome. This was a great podcast. What a cool guy. Really loved it. Really enjoyed it. And he said, by the way, how awesome and how ironic and how cool is it that one of the pieces of advice that Victor, who was the guest, shared is not to be afraid to reach out to people. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone and or send out an email or however you want to do it, but don't be afraid to just reach out to strangers, because we're all people, we're all human beings, and you know, we're open to receiving contact. So just reach out. That was what he said on the episode. He said, look, I have people who reach out to me all the time, and I like it. I mean, I like being able to help people out and lend a helping hand. And Adam said, how cool is that? Because that's how he and I connected. He reached out to me. He's a USC graduate. I'm a USC graduate. I'm older than he is. And when he was graduating from college, he took a job working for a big bank in their wealth management group. And he reached out to me through LinkedIn and introduced himself and said, hey, I'm a recent USC graduate. I'm working for this, you know, big bank and would love to connect and get acquainted. And, I said, sure, let's connect. So we jumped on the phone and our phone call, Chris, is this story okay? I hope I'm not.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So yep. in our phone call, we talk and I was really rough on the guy, and not because I'm a bad guy. Hopefully I'm not a bad guy, but I was just kind of like, I was not my best self on that call. And basically what that call was him reaching out to sort of get advice on the wealth management business.
Yeah.
And me kind of like, I clearly was demonstrating the fact that I was not a huge fan of being in the wealth management business, and kind of let him know that, like, hey man, I did not have, this was not the most fun experience for me. And I sort of shared that. I didn't go into great detail, but it was, I clearly gave off the vibe that it wasn't, you know, something that I necessarily enjoyed all that much. And it wasn't a very long conversation. So whatever, I didn't really give it much thought. He wound up sending me an email a couple days later and basically was like, hey, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for a really polite email. By the way, I noticed in your bio that you're a big baseball fan, that you're a big Angels fan. If you ever want to go to a baseball game, just let me know and I'm happy to go anytime. Like, all right, sure. Like, you want to go this Sunday? And then so through that, we became friends. And I said to him two things. Number one is, you should have reached out to me to talk about baseball, not to talk about wealth management, number one. And number two is, dude, I'm so sorry that I took out my lack of love for my time in that industry on my conversation with you. But there are a couple of lessons in there and a couple of nuggets in there, which is why I share this long-winded and seemingly windy story with you and with your listener. What am I getting at? What's the point of all this? Number one is, in the wealth management business, you need to be fearless. You need to be able to reach out to anyone. You need to be willing to reach out to anyone. My friend Adam demonstrated that in his willingness to reach out to me. That's something that I've always had the ability to do independent of being in that industry. Number two is, have an open mind, because you never know where relationships are going to take you.
Mm-hmm.
Adam probably didn't realize that we were going to become good buddies. I certainly didn't realize we were going to become good buddies, but we became good buddies through this sort of random cold call LinkedIn outreach thing. And number three is you're probably going to develop a relationship, not because someone is reaching out to you to pitch you business or someone's reaching out to you to even talk business, but because you can connect over a common interest. So he and I bonded over our shared love of baseball. That's why we became good buddies. And I discovered that he's a really good guy and we've connected. But it was sort of this love for baseball that established this friendship. So my advice to listeners is when you are looking to connect with people, number one, go out, do the outreach, be fearless. Don't be afraid to reach out to people. But when you do the outreach, try to find that common bond that the person you're reaching out to is going to genuinely be interested in engaging on, not the artificial marker that you might be expecting to talk to them about.
Yeah, definitely went a different direction than I expected. But no, I thought that it's still great advice because overcoming the fear of reaching out is obviously such a key. It's kind of weird that we fear that, but I suppose it just stems from fear of failure because you're fearing that you're going to reach out to somebody and you're going to fail, quote unquote, in whatever your intention was, which was maybe to get a sale, to book a meeting, to whatever it is. And I'm sure with all the experience you've had in entrepreneurship, you would the advice being you can't fear that because you're going to be required to do that numerous times throughout your entrepreneurial journey. I definitely had to overcome that in wealth management. That is very true. And I love the advice around trying to connect over just something else that's a passion, which is I would say from my experience, and I'm sure you can resonate the same, especially on LinkedIn, is there's so many. How often do you get a cold outreach on LinkedIn and the very first message is them basically like trying to pitch you or sell you?
Oh, it's awful. It's terrible. Yeah.
And in your bio, you do mention like things that you like, so they could.
Totally.
You're giving them the ammunition to be like, hey, you can reach out to me on. Effort. Exactly. And that's a bit of the drawback that a lot of people have.
Chris, so, I will add one nugget for your listeners.
For sure.
So that I can directly answer your question on a lesson learned from being in the wealth management business.
Okay.
Which is something that I learned is the importance as an entrepreneur of not being in a commoditized business. So the wealth management business is a highly commoditized business. And that was something that I learned while I was in it. I didn't know it before I was in it. I didn't really understand what the wealth management business was all about until I got in it. That's a whole nother story and I won't bore you and your listeners with it. But once I got into the business, I quickly learned that the wealth management industry consists of people selling highly commoditized products. And as an entrepreneur, you don't want to do that. You want to sell a differentiated product. And that was a lesson that I took very deeply to heart. And when you look at the businesses that I'm in, you might wonder, well, why are you selling refurbished Herman Miller Aeron chairs? Why are you selling customized private label premium cigars? Well, one way of answering that question is they're highly differentiated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would 100% agree on that statement about the wealth management industry. It is very commoditized. There's a lot of industries that are like that. And I think that's where a lot of frustration comes for people who have that entrepreneurial spirit, but are stuck in that employee world. Like I kind of am currently, but looking to get myself out. It definitely was one of the reasons why I left wealth management. There was way more to it, but again, not the right time or place to get into that conversation. When I'd love to dig more into that, though, that whole concept of if you're an entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur, how do you, I guess, what would be some of the advice you'd give them as far as how to, I guess, look at things in a different way so that they're looking at how to create an opportunity for themselves that is not a commoditized business?
I think the first step is to try to figure out where the opportunity is within whatever market you're interested in pursuing. So try to find that gap in the market. I also think it's really important for you as an entrepreneur to understand your customer intimately, to understand where your product fits relative to your customer's needs and wants. Too often, as entrepreneurs, we fall in love with our ideas, and we fall in love well before we do the hard work that's required to assess whether it's even a good idea or not. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important for anyone thinking about starting a business or anyone who is already an entrepreneur, but thinking about starting either a new division within a business or introducing a new product or starting another business, before you do anything, you need to, number one, identify who your core customer is. Who is your beachhead customer? Number two, know that customer inside and out. Know everything about that person. Who is he or she or they? And you've got to talk to that person, and you've got to ask them and assess in as thorough a way as possible whether they like what you're selling. Not, do they, someone can like what you're selling on, they're sort of like trying to figure out the most eloquent way of saying this, but there are gradients of liking what you're selling. You can like what someone's selling and say, yeah, this is nice, I like it. Or you could say, I can't live without this. I'm willing to pay whatever your asking price is.
Right.
Someone who says, yeah, this is nice, I like this, they're probably not going to buy it from you. Someone who says, I can't live without this, when are you introducing it to the market? When you do, make sure you call me. Here's my phone number. I'm willing to pay any price for it. That's a lot more promising of a lead. So make sure you do the hard work, the blocking and tackling before you decide to go to market.
Yeah, the validation process. Have you, do you have a bit of a validation process that you typically follow when looking to start a business or exploring an investment opportunity or anything like that?
So I described a little bit of it, certainly at a high level, in terms of how I try to think about it. So that's probably the best way to describe the process. But other things that I think about are, and this is an important one, is this the right business for me? This could be a great business. This could be a business that has a ton of potential, but am I the entrepreneur that is best suited to run this business? Am I capable of taking this business to where it can be? Am I going to enjoy taking this business to where it can be? Do I have the time to do it? Do I have the bandwidth? Do I have the energy? Do I have the interest? How does this align with my skill set? How does this align with my passion? How does this align with my resources, with my team? Do I really want to do this? Because at the end of the day, any business that you take on is a big commitment. Anything you do in life is a big commitment. It's very hard to do anything halfway. I don't know anyone who is halfway pregnant. You can't be halfway pregnant as an entrepreneur. Any entrepreneur who's halfway pregnant doesn't give birth. So you have to be all in. And even if you're running multiple businesses like we do, it took us a lot longer to get to this point than it should have because we were doing so many things at once. And to get to this point, it required us having many, many stretches of being all in on particular businesses. So those are some things that I would think about if I was a listener in that situation.
Right. I like what you said there. It sounded like before you saw the success you currently have, there was perhaps a bit of division in attention across multiple businesses. And then did you end up eliminating some businesses, or you just decided, you know what, we just need to focus on this in particular for whatever duration of time. And then that's where you ended up seeing the biggest gains and the biggest results, or was it maybe something different?
So when we first started the Velos Group, my brother and I had tons of ideas. We had every idea under the sun that we wanted to pursue. We probably had 10 different business ideas that we were thinking about building. And what we did was we spent the first year and a half as a company going after all these different ideas and really trying to turn these ideas into businesses. And it was a really fun year and a half. We enjoyed it. It was just an awesome experience. It was really exhilarating in a lot of ways, but we lost all of our money. We blew through all of our savings. That wasn't fun. It kind of sucked. And after about a year and a half, I had this come to Jesus moment, which was pretty crazy given that I'm Jewish. So for me to have a come to Jesus moment meant something. And that's what happens when you blow through your savings. It's very easy to find Jesus, at least figuratively. But what happened was we realized that we had to focus. We were running really hard, but we were running in so many different directions that we were essentially running in place. So what we had to do was we had to focus on our ideas that were closest to making money in order for us to be in a position where we could keep the lights on. Because without that, we're not in business. Game over. So what we did was we took our two businesses that were closest to monetization, one being Beverly Hills Chairs, the other being Custom Tobacco, and we just focused on those two. And it required us doing that to be able to get those businesses off the ground, because without that, we would have never had those businesses go anywhere. And being able to focus on those two businesses allowed us to, number one, get them going, get them launched. Number two, get them to a point where they were actual companies, not just ideas that were making a little bit of money, but true businesses that were fully operational and doing what businesses do. And number three, getting them to where they are now, where they're national companies selling to the kinds of customers who we were talking about earlier on in the show, where we have very, very high levels of customer satisfaction. There were not high levels of customer satisfaction when we first started these businesses, because you can't have a high level of customer satisfaction when you don't know what you're doing. So it takes time to learn how to be an entrepreneur. It takes time to learn how to run a business. It takes time to learn how to do this the right way. But when you do, it makes a huge difference, and it's visible in every aspect of your operation.
Right. Do you remember some of the businesses you guys ended up having to set aside? Have you ever considered revisiting them, bringing them back, or are they dead and gone?
R.I.P.
Yeah.
R.I.P. for the best. I think that what happens is over time, you come to realize what you're good at. You come to realize what you're capable of doing. Some of those business ideas were bad, and some of those business ideas were good, but they weren't ideas that we were the right people to pull off. The bad ideas, let them rest in peace. The good ideas were either already executed by other people or may be executed by other people someday. So I don't feel bad about businesses that I didn't pull off, because at the end of the day, I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm bad at. I'm bad at a ton of things in life, and I'm good at maybe a couple of things. And I think it's really important that you channel your energy and your focus and your time and your, you just focus every ounce of your being into what you're good at rather than into what someone else is good at that you're not necessarily the best at.
Yeah. I think that's pretty sound advice. That it's a lot of people will say, you know, play to your strengths kind of thing, or play to your strengths and hire people who can fill the gap of your weaknesses. Has that been a bit of the strategy that you guys have done? So you're surrounding yourself with people that fill those gaps?
You have to do that as a leader. Yeah. You have to do that. That's core advice, Chris. So what you just said then and there, every listener should, if they don't already know it, should incorporate that into their leadership practice, into their entrepreneurial practice. That's one-on-one. So with you every step of the way.
That's awesome. So we've definitely covered a lot. I'm wondering to wrap things up, as I like to do, what would be that one piece of advice you'd want to share with the audience to help them level up wherever they need it most?
I actually just touched on it a little bit, so I'll expand on it a little bit more.
Sure.
Chris, I'm a big believer that in life, most people are bad at most things. I personally am bad at so many things, I couldn't even tell you all the things that I'm bad at. And now that I know that we're running low on time, I definitely won't tell you all the things that I'm bad at, because we just don't have the time for it. The truth is, if we started this podcast with me listing off all the things that I'm bad at, we still wouldn't have enough time for it. I think that we're all good at a few things, but we all have that one thing that makes us special. We all have that one thing that makes us unique, makes us different. We have that superpower. And the more quickly you can figure out what it is about you that makes you special, what it is about you that makes you different, what it is about you that makes you unique, the more successful you'll be in life, the more successful you'll be in business, the more successful you'll be as a leader. So my advice to anyone listening is to get on that leadership journey as quickly as you can. Get on that process of self-discovery. Understand who you are, what you're good at, what you're great at, and channel every fiber of your being into that.
I think that is fantastic advice. So if people wanted to reach out to you, connect with you, where's the best place for them to find you?
I try to make it really easy for listeners, for anyone. You could just find me by my name, Adam Mendler. So you can go to adammendler.com. You can go to any of my social media handles, at Adam Mendler. So at Adam Mendler on Instagram, at Adam Mendler on Twitter. You can find my podcast, 30 Minute Mentors, at 30minutementors.com. That's all spelled out. You could also find 30 Minute Mentors on your favorite podcasting app. So whatever podcast you're listening, whatever app you're listening to this great podcast on, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, just type out 30 Minute Mentors, and hope you enjoy as much as I enjoy, because as you could probably tell from this conversation, it's something that I'm really passionate about. Chris, just wanted to thank you again for having me on, and thank your listeners for taking the time to listen to our conversation.
You're very welcome. And thanks again for being a guest.
Thank you.
Take care. Thanks for listening to Get Coach 360. If you're looking for more information, you can head over to our website, which is getcoach360.com. You'll find the show notes for this and every other episode there. And if getting actionable advice every week from professional coaches is something you want more of, then make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes.